having a chip on your shoulder can work extraordinarily well for society, but I don't know how it works from a peace of mind, quality of life, being in love, sharing love, being in connection with people. I think that there's better ways.
Yeah.
When you find out who you are and you live that expression versus proving out who you want people to think you are, even though it's not who you are.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward.
Welcome back to another episode of the Real Business Owners Podcast. You've got myself, Trevor Cowley, as always. Buddy. And today we've got a really special guest. We came up to Salt Lake and just enjoy his spot, his environment. And honestly, man, it was a real treat to be at your rehearsal today. But guys, we got Garrett Gunderson here, and he's just a wealth of knowledge. He's a disruptor in the kind of the finance money space as a whole. But like, as I've read your books, well, one book, I haven't read multiple yet, but it's like, man, like it's a whole different perspective because we really do kind of just, we all just kind of take what society gives us and we run with it, and and breaking that herd mentality as you talk about in your book, it's incredible. So
I would call him like a thought leader. You know, like I've never
THOT.
Not that.
That hoe over there. I didn't know what that was.
I say things that I shouldn't be saying, I guess, anymore, because it's just, you know, do not know.
My son always says low key before he talks about anything. I'm like, what is low key?
Yeah. Well, like, I said, I've got a 10 body count on my like little farm area.
But now that's how many people you sleep with.
Yeah. And like, I was like, I've killed 10 raccoons. Can I not just say that I've got a body count of 10 in terms of record?
Like, no, that sounds really bad when you combine bad, that.
Like,
right?
That's some bestiality shit. I mean, damn. So it's like, dude, we're wrong even when we're right. You know, society's like, got us all twisted.
I'm feeling older these days. My kids love to tease me for being old. It's like their favorite thing. But
can't keep up.
I had a pretty special moment that my 17-year-old, when we were in Spain, turned to my wife and said, "Isn't it cool that dad knows all this stuff about finance and he's willing to teach me?"
Yeah,
so we're just walking. He's asking all these questions. We're discussing the whole thing. So, like,
well, a lot of parents don't have really that open dialogue with their kids, right? Like, money's like a, like, even my wife, she said, we never, like, nobody knows how much our parents make. Like, they just don't talk about it, right? And so it just ends up being this thing that you gradually make your way into. And you're just like, well, what am I supposed to do?
With no instruction manual.
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah,
nothing.
Just kind of. So. Good luck. I hope you don't blow it.
I kind of had this weird.
But everybody does.
Yeah. At some time, right? You learn the hard way.
I had this weird, like, as I read your book, I had this weird moment where I was like, oh my gosh, man. Like, so true. So right. Like, all your perspectives are like kind of against the grain or against the rules, right? And I was like, man, I kind of feel like, because I teach on money stuff all the time. Like, I've been in really the sales side, but like tax and accounting, and I teach people this stuff all the time. And I'm like, man, I kind of feel like the Dave Ramsey of entrepreneurship now, because I've been giving all these things to do, like go build your safe investment so you can take bigger risks, you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, man. And then reading your book, I'm like, it really doesn't matter. Like, we're all just prolonging actually living by kind of following societal norms, you know? So calling myself out a little bit, like, your book actually did really help change my perception on.
Sorry, I wrote the book because I made the mistakes, man.
Yeah.
You know, like I was 18 years old when I made my first investment, because my mom wouldn't sign off when I was younger than that. I put money in a variable universal life policy, which is highly expensive and underperforming. So, and then I got an internship when I was 19 in a financial services firm, and I was peddling mutual funds, which, you know, by reading Killing Sacred Cows, I'm not really a big fan of.
Right.
But I didn't know any better. And I just started to ask different questions. I started to travel somewhere every single month while I was still in college and wasn't married. To, when you're young, people will talk to you that are really wealthy because they like that young person's asking questions, or go to these different events.
The hustle. Yeah.
Right. They're like, hey, and I learned that when I was 15, because I had a business detailing cars, and I was in a business competition through Students in Free Enterprise where there was a panel of judges, and I went in so nervous, but I realized they were like wanting to see me succeed and help me out, and took me under their wing and you know, like, helped me. So like, I had these early mentorship kind of moments that really helped me to have the confidence to ask different questions.
Yeah.
Because I would be a young kid. I remember I was 20, maybe 21. And there's this meeting and there's an attorney presenting. And he's presenting all these estate planning concepts and talking about this thing called second to die insurance to cover estate taxes. And I'm just running calculators while he talks. And I start arguing with him. Not like, I was more of a dick back then. So I was arguing with him.
Well, but your
like,
ego was arguing a little right, bit. Because I was with like, some I'm logic, right.
And,
I'm probably, like,
and, you yeah. know, and he was older and yeah. we got in this big argument and I was being called a fanatic. But the problem was I was doing the math. I was right.
Yeah.
I was like, that process that you're talking about only makes sense if someone can't earn 5% on their money. They earn 5%, they'd be better paying more tax than taking money that's earning, getting next to nothing on it, mm-hmm. just to pay a tax. And yeah. you know, and that's why I just started asking this guy. I'm like, well, would you rather pay 1 million or 10 million in tax? And he said, well, 1 million. I'm like, well, if you paid 10 million, you made a whole hell of a lot more money.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I think more productively instead of reductionist thinking. And so I just learned to ask a lot of questions as an annoying little brat because I wanted to learn for myself. I wanted yeah. to succeed on my own. And I didn't know. I didn't, you know, my dad was a coal miner. My mom taught me how to be a wise steward of money, but not spending more than what I make, but not necessarily how to invest. So I had some decent habits,
yeah.
but there was a lot more to learn. Yeah.
Let's talk about like the book that you're currently working on and some of the stuff that you were going over today in the rehearsal. Because, you know, even after that was done, I shared with you, like, I believe that that's what's missing in the world right now. And that's a message that needs to be heard by mm-hmm. the masses. And that's, I mean, if it resonates with us and we do well financially, we own businesses and, you know, like we were talking in the car, we're like, which one of these are we? Like, you can take a little, on our journey, I think we maybe hit a few of those right. personalities, right? Like yeah. starting out, you're this person and then you start making money. Maybe you go to the high roller or whatever, right?
Right. And what people could figure out which persona they are.
Yeah.
GarrettGunderson.com/quiz.
Okay.
There's no charge, but then you find out which of the four that you lead with in today's yeah. world. And there's really two sides to each of those personas. There's the shadow side, which is from scarcity.
Yeah.
And the winning side, which is coming from collaboration and abundance and co-creation and value creation at the yeah. at the core of it instead of like
chasing
scarcity,
money.
Right? And chasing money. So by figuring that helps. By the way, as we were driving up here, I found out the galley copy, I ordered 1,000 of them. So I'll get you guys a couple of my new book.
Oh, awesome.
Is at the, at the distribution center here in Utah. So
cool.
I should have it any day now.
We would love
it. Comes out, it comes out October.
What's the title of that again?
Money Unmasked.
Okay.
The play's called Already Won, but the book's called Money Unmasked.
Okay.
Yeah, so, it's kind of weird that I do a play, like just to give context for the listeners.
Well,
I think it's amazing. Like,
yeah, it's a little different way to teach money.
Well, it makes it entertaining and educational, right? Like even on social media now, they're like, you got to be entertaining, educational, motivate. What are the 3 M's or something like that? Motivating. You know,
memorable,
whatever.
I'm making it up, but I'm guessing
it's something like that. EM3, right? Like educate, entertain, or motivate,
yeah.
something like that. And you're doing like all three of those when you do that. You're educating, you're entertaining, and you're motivating, right? Yeah. Like you make people ask themselves the right questions to where they can find the answer almost, right? Which is what's unique right now because everybody else wants to tell you exactly how to think or how to act or what your why is or what your purpose should be versus you just, you know, looking within.
Well, you and I talked about that. You've taken more time in silence or space, right? To listen to yourself instead of everybody else.
We were saying you have to feel like that you're going crazy to unwind your way out of society's norms to a certain extent, right? And that's a very, very difficult place to be because you feel like you're in no man's land. You're going a little bit crazy. Am I doing the right thing when you spend time alone or in silence and you're asking yourself all these questions and you're on this journey called life, trying to figure out what your why is or what your purpose is? And, you know, usually these questions don't really come about until you've seen a certain level of success, unfortunately. because we distract ourselves with success, that's going to solve all of our problems, right?
Right. And then you get there. Society's definition of success.
Yeah, typically. Right. We're chasing that so that other people see us as in a certain light. So we're trying to control how other people view us. To
validate our value.
Correct.
Right. And our identity. And that's a tough thing to break.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like so I sold my business in 2021.
And that was probably a big part of your identity for a lot of years, or
right. Like, and I think it would have been even harder if I didn't go to Italy in 2017, where we took the summer, and all of a sudden I wasn't doing anything for my business for a summer. It was all running without me.
Yeah.
Which we had to prepare for a while before I went. And the first 2.5 weeks, I was actually not feeling well. I was like kind of depressed. I'm like,
yeah,
hey, I'm in this amazing place in Italy, and I'm like feeling like antsy and anxious, and like I should be doing something. Norm. I'm looking at like our Slack sales channel being like, there's not enough going on there, right? And like I want to swoop in, and then all of a sudden they figure it out without me, and I'm like, oh, I'm not directly involved with all the value that's created, but that should be exciting. But there's a little bit of like
am I not valuable enough
and then all of a sudden I separated enough from my business to be like, well, that's a canvas that I can create value for, but it's not who I am. But still, in selling that business, and then I did a comedy tour and filmed the comedy special around the topic of money. Like, that was really fun, but challenging, because it was like, am I really capable of doing that? And I did it in a pretty short period of time. And it was really hard to do 15, 16 cities as a new comedian who just sold his business, doesn't have a database, doesn't like social media. So I don't have a social media following.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was exciting and exhilarating at the same time. And I had a lot of time to think, and had a lot of time to be insecure and be like, can I do this? And is this going to work out? But then I just worked through it and I enjoyed it. And it had me face a lot of the things that I might not have faced otherwise, and ask questions I might not have asked otherwise, and challenge myself in ways, because to be present on stage, you just have to be secure and you have to be able to like be in the moment, instead of like when a comedian's not funny, it's because they're in their head and not with the crowd.
Yeah.
Like having a separate conversation.
Yeah.
So if I'm like, oh, how am I doing? Or this, that didn't get laughs. Then all of a sudden it destroys the performance. But if I'm just whatever comes to my mind, and the first thing that comes to my mind, I say
it,
and then I'm interacting with the crowd versus like trying to get a reaction out of them. Mm. The funniest moments, if you go to much comedy, is usually that spur of the moment, something that was said just to that crowd. An accident, a happy accident, saying something like, I made a mistake, and when we were filming the special, and it ended up being hilarious and we kept it in. You know, like, I think that we spend so much time trying not to make mistakes in life that it just overtakes our life. And we spend so much time trying to earn success in everybody else's eyes that we miss the point of who we really are and crowd out any of that time and consideration. And people are scared of space because, like, do we like ourselves enough?
Yeah.
You know, and who are we without our stuff? There's like a lot of questions that come up with all that.
Do you believe that you have to create the version of self that you're proud of or that you want to be? Or do you think that that's just there and exists with inside you? You just have to go through the muck to find what's already there.
I think it's more the second piece.
Yeah.
I think it's like something that's there that we just have to rediscover or find or listen to. But a lot of times we take these detours because someone says, you should do this. And
we're
like, this is a good idea. And then we embrace something that isn't really who we are or what we want in the name of appeasing someone else, because maybe we're trying to earn their love or filling the void of when we were a kid and we didn't feel, you know, safe for a minute. Like, there's just so many of those dynamics that come up.
Yeah. Go ahead, Kel.
Well, I'm just thinking about something as well in the book, like Killing Sacred Cows. When I had this question come up as I was reading your book, where I was like, man, people are so attached to the money and the stuff and all these things, right? And they don't understand that the value is really in them, and that if they give more value, it's going to create more value back to them. And but it's because they're usually doing things that they're not really passionate about anymore.
Trading time for money.
Yeah. Often.
Right.
And I know
trading time for benefits.
Yeah. And we've taken on projects before, and it was fun and exciting at first. So you feel like you're passionate about it and you're so invested into it. It's like, you don't know when to just give up on it, you know? And I'm like, I'm just curious with like, with your
sunk
experience.
Costs are
and,
the hardest cost to figure out.
Yeah.
I mean, you're in accounting, like,
yeah.
It's like, how often do we hold on to something that we should have let go of long ago?
Yeah.
I'd say it this way. When we don't think about what we want and we jump into a career, the hard work is the career.
Right.
But the reality is, the hard work is discovering who we are and either inventing the career or finding the career that's a fit for us. That's the hard work. And then the rest of it starts to become easier.
Yeah.
But most people skip those steps because they're like, I got to get going. I got to get ahead. I got to. And even worse, they get into debt.
Yeah.
Like a student loan.
Yeah.
And now they feel this pressure.
Yeah.
And that pressure is circumventing the process of discovery. And now they're trapped in something they don't love, giving too much of who they are for not enough reward. And that's what starts to diminish their energy, diminish their life. And I think that's what starts to lead towards obesity. I think that's what starts to lead to chronic illness, which we have like 54% of the United States is chronically ill.
Yeah.
And depression is because we feel these external pressures and then we move to those. Like we're like, oh, I got to get a degree because if I don't get that degree, well, guess what? Like, it's a weird world, like with AI on the rise and everything. What's that degree really going to mean? I don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
Like, I think it's going to be relationships, and I think it's going to be the imperfections, and I think it's going to be connection.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things are going to be solved pretty easily with technology, artificial intelligence down the road.
Yeah, that's true. I see in the entrepreneurship world too, like where they work so hard for something, right? And they get to these points where they're like, well, I'll solve all my problems by just making more money because I'm an entrepreneur, I'm in sales, I'm good at that.
That's the entrepreneur's creed, right?
Yeah.
Like, no, just make more money.
Exactly. Yeah. Or
until they hit the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they get burned out and exhausted.
Yep.
I think you can have that philosophy when you're 20s.
Yeah.
Your 30s, it starts to be a very big cost if you have a family.
Yeah, it does.
Right? And all of that extra effort in the business that doesn't give attention to family or an individual's health compounds and eventually becomes something that ends up in divorce or disease, exhaustion, whatever it is. And so I don't think that there's ever really perfect balance. I don't really think that, but I think that we can have depth and harmony.
Yeah.
To me, depth is we've really done the search for who we are and what we want, and we become the author of that. Harmony is we live with intention so that we're where we're at and we're present instead of trying to be perfectly balanced. There's times where I'm writing and I'm completely out of balance because it's flowing. It's exciting. I'll call my wife and I'm like, look what I just wrote. I'm like, I'm going to keep writing. She's like, you're on a flow. And then there's other times where I'm like, let's just go to the cabin and do nothing for a week. Right. Yeah. And I'm really good at doing nothing now. Yeah. I wasn't always that way, but
it's
like,
a skill.
Right. Because when I could see value in leisure, my life changed.
Yeah.
I grew up in my 20s from a family with an amazing work ethic, which is great. But then I started to meet these really wealthy people that were my clients. And I was like, their quality of life was completely different than mine.
Yeah.
And I started looking for satiating experiences and catalyzing, you know, moments that create connection and conversation. And, you know, as we were kind of looking at all my whiskey over here and like everything up in here in this vice room, whatever you might call it, you know, made a latte because when to make a latte, we usually sit down and have a conversation afterwards.
Yeah.
Right. Or if we do a whiskey tasting, it's everybody sitting around, we're having a conversation or we're smoking tobacco pipe. Like that's something that it takes a long time.
Eating
eating my jerky just to try to impress you that I killed an elk with a bow.
I still need to get a taste of that.
It is good.
That we'll get some from inside. I think this one's tapped out, but we got more inside.
G jerky's on the way.
I have like 17 points because we're all here in Utah for my elk hunt, and I still haven't drawn yet. I'm like, when is it going to happen, man? I can't wait, you know?
I don't know. My first time elk hunting with a bow, my buddy, this guy, you guys might know Ben Greenfield, he called me up, and he was like, hey, you want to go
bow hunting?
He didn't say bow.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, let's do it. So I go buy like because we're going bull, and I'd only shot cow elk for like probably 3 or 4 times. And so I go get this really nice gun, send him a picture. He's like, dude, we're going bow hunting. It was like in 33 days.
And you've never shot a bow?
I had, but I hadn't shot it at an animal.
Yeah.
So I was like every day shooting 3 times a day. Yeah. And I got one that year.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Is that what we ate?
No, that was the one I got this last year, which in that 2 years, my level of hunting ability is exponentially increased. Like when I saw that one, my heart rate didn't rise. When I pulled it back, I didn't even feel it. I made all the right decisions around where to go, when to shoot, where I hit him, how quickly. Like it was like a totally different experience. The first one, like I was
sweating.
I was like having to meditate to calm my heart rate down. I was shaking. I did pull early enough, which is good, but I'm holding it for like 30 seconds, which feels like 3 minutes at the time.
Yeah.
And then it stepped forward. So I didn't get it. I only got one long. It was just, you know, where this one, like he was dead in really fast.
Yeah. Fell over pretty much. Hit his vitals.
Well, he ran right into a tree and broke his hip and fell down. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure your comments in the podcast.
Yeah.
These assholes. Elk meat is the best jerky meat though.
It's incredible. Always like, by the way, like if someone's vegan, go ahead and say we're dicks. But if you eat meat, get over it.
Yeah. It is what it is.
If you eat meat, you don't
eat like a ham and cheese sandwich.
Yeah, you don't get to say you're unethical for being a hunter. Yeah,
exactly. do you have daily things that you do every day that are non-negotiables for you that get you in a certain frame of mind or a certain state or gives you peace?
It started with a very short period of time. Okay. It's a pretty extended period of time now. And if I skip it, it actually impacts me.
Yeah.
So like
jet lag for the rest of the day, kind of ornery.
Yeah. So like what I'll do is I get up, I take just a couple, like I take some water and a couple supplements, and then I go turn on this little light, and it's a happy light. So it like lets me know it's morning when it's still dark outside. And I write in my 5-minute journal. I don't know if you guys have ever used the 5-minute journal.
It's out right there.
I love that thing. Yeah. You know, it's like, what am I grateful for? What's the intent for the day? And then, you know, what are my affirmations? And then what were the 3 best moments of the day before? And what did I learn? So like, I really like taking that time to write daily. Yeah. I mean, and then, I go turn on the sauna, and then I come back and I write in this book. It's called The Laugh, Love, Accept, Forgive. And so I go through these different components of my life and say, what am I protecting, defending, or trying to control that's actually not allowing me to feel my full emotions or is having me be less than fully expressed. So I'll write down what those things are.
A lesser version of yourself, pretty much.
Right. So I write that down, right? And I'm like, so I get really in touch with that and I handwrite it. I'm pretty much the only one that sees it. Then I go through and I acknowledge, you know, what I'm protecting, accepting, or protecting, defending, and trying to control. And then I go through and forgive myself for any of that.
Yep. Mm.
Then I accept it and acknowledge it. And then I write down loving statements after that. So it's actually FAL.
About self?
Yeah, just all about self. And then I go and I think, is there anyone in the world that I have any level of hatred, dislike, that I'm shunning, that I'm judging, or I'm jealous of?
And then you wish them well?
I actually write it down. I write down what it is about them. And then I go, okay, what I'm writing about them is actually something in me that I haven't processed.
Mm.
So then I just rewrite, what is it that I haven't accepted in myself based upon those emotions? Mm. So that I can see that that's just a mirror and it's a trigger I have in myself. And then I go through a little exercise on that, that I kind of like, even if I'm like, well, if I write down that I'm being a victim, you know, maybe that's what I got from one of that. And I'm like, I'm victim lovable me. So I just learned to kind of love that. Then I write down the truth of who I am after that. And then when that's
truth
finished,
of who you are, as in like, I'm not of it, you know, I have control or
like no, that type it's, of situation. I mean, like, I haven't really ever talked about this, but I write like, you know, I'm an aspect of God, just like you are. I'm one with that. I
am one with the creator.
Yeah, I'm the divine, living, loving essence of the Lord. Like I'm writing down those levels of statements.
Oh, that's cool.
Like you're, I am like creation.
Years ago when I was in this therapy group, this was so hard for me, but they say, who are you? Well, I'm Kel. I do sales. No, not what do you do? Who are you? Well, I'm a dad. No, not that you're dad. Who are you? And it's like, that's really what they were trying to get you to is that type of stuff. It's like, well, I'm a gift, you know, I'm resourceful. I help people, you know, like who are you? Not like, what are you?
What do you do?
You know, what's your name? What do you do for a living? You know, what are your goals?
The typical like, normal society shit.
Right. This is how you opt out of that system.
Yeah.
So then I just think of all of those emotions and I write them down and like, what are the adjectives essentially? Then I just close my eyes and I just accept God's loving. Like just take it in. And then I just give up all of those things to God. Mm. Then I meditate.
Yeah.
And then after I meditate, I write down what happened in the meditation because I do a specific type of meditation that you can have inner experiences. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I'm just, my mind is active through the whole thing and I'm struggling and giving that up.
Sometimes it's blank.
Other times I see certain lights or hear sounds. And so I write about that. I write about what the bridge from meditation to my daily life is and what the kind of lessons were. And that's ends that. Then I go get in the sauna. Mm. And in the sauna, sometimes I'll rehearse. Like this morning in the sauna, I just rehearsed the one-man show, right? I just kind of went through some lines and stuff, which actually tripped me up in that second to last scene. That's what I was rehearsing this morning. So I was like almost like too aware of it. But
it was, yeah, too, you, it was yeah. too conscious yeah. instead of subconsciously just right. letting instead it of flow. Just
being, I was yeah, like, yeah, I was yeah. thinking too yeah, much, yeah, right? Yeah, I was yeah. in the moment.
You
so
got
then,
in your own way.
Then yeah. I just take a, I have like a little room. So I take a quick shower. Then I get in the cold plunge for 5 minutes. Mm. So you're like cold plunge for 5 minutes. I get out. Takes me forever to dry off because when you're that cold, it just seems to like.
Yeah.
And then I and then I put in yeah. some earplugs and dip my head in the cold plunge. And then I turn on a talk from either my spiritual mentors or this morning I just put on the one man show to listen while I do 20 minutes of stretching. So I do the five Tibetan stretches and then I do some stuff I learned way back in the day in CrossFit. I hang from a bar. I do some lymph drainage. I do some rebounding. I just do like 20 minutes of stretching. And then
showing your body love at that point.
Right. And then that's kind of my morning routine at that point. Mm-hmm. So some days, you know, some days I meditate for 2.5 hours. That's a good day.
Wow.
Some days I meditate for 45 minutes. This morning I only made it about 20 minutes. And then I was like, hey, I'm leaving an hour earlier than normal. So cutting I'm just going to, and what I do is I just put on a spiritual talk because I look at that as like a form of meditation where I'm just receiving.
How much do you control, I guess, I don't know if that's the right word, the information that goes into your mind on a day-to-day basis so that you could control how you feel, right? Yeah. Like, is that something that is top of mind all the time in terms of whether it's music or, you know, yeah.
So, look, I don't have any news feeds on my phone at all.
Yeah.
None. Like I have no articles that come on to my phone at all. The only time I'm on any form of social media is responding to people who put comments in YouTube.
Okay.
And I respond to most of those. Some I don't know what they're talking about, so I don't know how to respond. And some are like
gibberish. Huh?
Some are like this long-haired douchebag, and I just go, true. Right? Yeah. Like it never bothers me, how, no matter if people are mean.
Because you do the exercise of the reflection of self, and so that you just take that information.
And I usually just do that.
That's a reflection of self.
Yeah, I usually just do that, like if I'm waiting for something.
Yeah.
Or taking a shit.
Yeah.
You know. So that's kind of when I respond. So just when people are reading, they can know that might be the case.
Yeah. So if he's showing you love, it's
and I don't have any news. Like we don't have any like we just have apps, right?
Yeah.
So I watch zero news because I know that if it's MSNBC, it's propaganda for liberals, and if it's Fox, it's propaganda for conservatives. And I just know that like I know who owns it in the end and what the narratives really are, and it's not really reality. And even if it is reality, it's not the reality I'm going to do something about.
The same coin, but two different sides.
Right. So I'm like, so I'm just, so I opted out of that.
Yeah.
You know, the if I'm listening to something that's not like
positive,
spiritual, positive, it's usually like sports. Like I'll listen to some sports talk. I'll listen to some sports.
So you are a big frequency type person in terms of like information and frequency and making sure that you're aligned.
Right. Like I don't want to be influenced by a lot.
Yeah.
Like I don't even read a lot of books because I know that people write a book with a certain
purpose.
Like they have a perspective and that perspective may not be any, like I tend to get excited to want to implement everything from a book. So I haven't read a business book for a long time. I haven't read because I don't want to like start getting a whole bunch of ideas. I want the meditation to be what helps me with what I'm doing in business. I want talking with my partners to be what influences me on what I'm
doing. So you're external, not so much. You're doing all the things to tap into the things that are already there within you. That's your divine that makes you operate at your peak, which gives you the information that you feel like could help other people.
And even though I'm in my mid-40s now, I feel like I'm learning as much and feel just as much needs to be learned as before, if not more. So like there isn't a week that goes by that I don't have at least one or two sessions where I have one of my coaches coaching me. So there's a guy, a performance psychologist that, you know, works with the Milwaukee Bucks that he coaches me on, you know, we end up about twice a month.
Okay.
Right. And so that's all like on how the mind works and how to like work with the subconscious and to create the right habits. Or this woman, Allison, like hired her really just to be a better husband. But, you know, this week's coaching session was all about just the space and being okay with the space and just watching the ebbs and the flows and like breathing. Look at there's times where it's, you know, constriction and times where it's expansion and just being okay with that.
I've
not
talked
being judgmental about
that before on the podcast. Remember when we did breath work with Shannon?
Well, when you were talking this morning, remind me of that.
Yeah. And but I was kind of going through my own journey of kind of, you know, being by myself and like asking myself all these questions, but then feeling crazy. And then when I did the breath work, I was like, well, in order to live wholly, it expands and contracts. You have to contract and go away to know yourself so that when you do expand to the world, that you're bringing more value to it. If you're always expanded and always in the world, you're just going to be of worldly things.
Yeah, I like to call it be in the world, but not of it.
Correct.
Right.
Yes, exactly.
Like Jesus always said that, be in the world, but not of it.
Yeah.
And David Hawkins, who I love listening to his stuff, he has a program called In the World, But Not Of It that I probably listened to 20 times, you know? So it's like, yeah. So I just have, instead of reading, I just like having someone that I'm directly talking to.
You're getting information.
I just remember it's more. Just it's personalized.
Rather than a book.
Yeah. And I'm in a place where I can afford that. Yeah. Yeah. So I just do that instead of like, cause I could read a book and it's like, it takes me a long time. It's a lot of effort. And my retention of that book is so minimal. Much less, and it's not personalized at the same level as, you know.
So when you're asking, hey, I'm dealing with this, and then there's a lesson on how to deal with something that's real.
Yeah, I have another guy.
Versus trying to figure out how to apply it.
Yeah, I meet with someone after I'm with you guys today that we do an hour and a half, and it's all about how do I make an impact in the world without losing the connection to myself? That's what the whole session will be about today. And where that confusion can come in.
Yeah.
Right? Because it wasn't confusing when I was 20. It was like, I just worked.
Yeah.
And I want to make more money because I want to be seen as successful, and I want to be seen as successful because I had insecurities and doubts and
you're from small town Price, Utah, and you're going to prove that you are valuable.
Right. I'm going to prove myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And that was like in the play when I'm talking about, you can, that might be motivating initially, but it leads to bitterness and anger fed by a feeling of lack or scarcity. And that's, you know, that's like when I had a comedy set on Friday, one of my personal trainers back in the day used to, you know, train me. I was getting sued and he's like, what's
up? As all business owners do at one point or another.
That's the only time I went to court, dude. It's the only time I went to court. And it took the fear away from it. And by the way, I was not guilty.
Yeah.
But I remember he goes, what's that like? And I'm such a dick. I'm like, you'll never be successful enough to know. And so he was front running the comedy show. So I shared it. And he started laughing. He goes, but tell him how I'm successful now. I'm like, I'm not going to say you're successful now because I want you to keep going.
Yeah.
I'm like, and I was joking. I'm like, it's like, people that have a chip on their shoulder, though, like Michael Jordan was the best basketball player, arguably, but not the happiest.
Yeah.
There's, you know, I mean, like that dude, his Hall of Fame speech was one of the most negative things I'd ever heard. Like, so that having a chip on your shoulder can work extraordinarily well for society, but I don't know how it works from a peace of mind, quality of life, being in love, sharing love, being in connection with people. I think that there's better ways.
Yeah.
When you find out who you are and you live that expression versus proving out who you want people to think you are, even though it's not who you are. And that's where a lot of the world gets
stuck.
You're
living in a character that you believe will get the notoriety that will make you feel something. But by the time you get it, you'll feel nothing and feel less than when you started the journey to get that.
Yeah. Right? How many times have we heard from gurus that you should model success? Here's my problem. If you model success, you live out someone else's life instead of yours.
Their definition of it.
And you're ignoring your own talents, your own abilities, your own purpose, your own why, your own motivators, because you're going, well, someone else did really well in real estate, so I got to do real estate. Or someone else did really well because they're a good speaker, I'm going to become a speaker. Or so, like, and what if that isn't your path?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're modeling something, but I think that when it's true to who you are, you speak from a place of conviction versus regurgitation. And I mean, you train sales, so you could probably speak to this a whole lot better than I could. But the reality is, I know people that have used my words in the exact format and don't get the same result because it doesn't mean the same thing to them.
Yeah, absolutely. They got to have their own energy behind it. You know what I mean? The authenticity. Right.
I'm not speaking from the soul.
Right. And that's effort.
Well, people are copycatting the end result because they see people have an end result and they have a status that will make them, again, it's just filling the emptiness. And so if that status and the notoriety is going to be there because I see Garrett has it and I want that, but he's on stage, so I need to be on stage to get that same sort of fulfillment or status or happiness or whatever it is, right? And that's the toughest thing that anybody will ever have to go through is removing expectations of of other people and to go through the muck that society has placed on you to try to find out who you truly are.
It's kind of like part of the process.
It is. Yeah. Like for me, when I first started, it was like, what did I like doing as a kid? Because there's still a kid in me. And I'm like, I liked riding bikes as a kid. So I was like, I'm going to start riding bikes again. And I was riding bikes. I'm like, still feels cool. There's nostalgia to it almost, right? So it's like trying to tap into some of the things that actually made you feel a certain emotion when you were young probably will still make you feel that certain emotion even now.
Right.
Whether that's, you know, rafting the river or riding a bike or skateboarding or whatever it was that made you feel alive at one point. Like that's the least path of resistance to go feel alive again and start kind of tapping into that version of yourself that was you when you were happy at one point and living a little bit more free. And then that leads to one thing and then another thing. And then like, but you got to start honoring and doing something that starts bringing out that version of yourself.
I think that everybody could embrace a hobby.
Yeah.
When we don't have hobbies, then we're always stuck in that, like, you know, in the striver mode for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do more, earn more, be more. Where a hobby is just about enjoyment, losing track of time, no financial gain.
Yeah.
And that's where we a lot of times get those insights and those downloads and those epiphanies. Mm-hmm. Even though that's not the main reason to do it. It's just have a quality of life that you don't want to retire from.
Yeah.
What would you say to like entrepreneurs or just anybody really that's trying to produce in their life, how to flip the script, right? Because we've all been there where we're stuck in the like, well, to get to that point where I can do self-discovery and ride my bike again and I can, you know, use my create and start creating, like I gotta get to a certain point, whether it's financially or whatever, in order to even have the freedom to do that, right? Yeah.
I'd say like, look at the three things that you'd do if you had all the time and money in the world that have nothing to do with money.
Yeah.
And then look at all the things you're doing to earn money and say, what three things are not worth my time anymore?
Yeah.
Eliminate those three things. You've now found the time for those other three. And you're going to find you'll have better production because there's diminishing marginal productivity. When we spend too much time, we lower our, like we're spending more time, but we're lowering
energy.
Yeah. Our energy starts to decrease. Our productivity starts to decrease because look, I did strategic coach in my 20s. And the thing that they, you know, really convinced me to do is take free days, take time off. I was like, how's that going to help me make more money? But it does, because then you learn to delegate appropriately. You learn which projects really matter, but you come back rejuvenated.
Yeah.
You come back with more energy.
Sometimes you got to get out of your own way. You are the bottleneck.
We think of wealth as linear though, right? Like we've been trained. It's like time
in, out,
effort,
in out.
Yeah.
So like
but,
clock
but
in,
vision
you
is
clock
exponential.
Out and you get paid, right?
Vision's exponential.
Yeah.
And value is exponential. When it like, think of like a viral video. It's not because just that person
once.
Put the effort. It's like people start sharing it and you're
putting value into the world.
Yeah, stop thinking so isolated of just what you can accomplish and what you can do and what efforts you put out there and start allowing for that support. And that can start to create this opportunity that you get time off.
Yeah, vision really is where it all starts, man. Like I did the recording for our pocket coaching calls just the other day and I'm sitting in my home. And this was like me and my wife's dream home, you know? And I'm just sitting here, I'm like, you know, this was like, we came to this lot that we bought for 3 years just, and imagined our home.
Yeah,
and then we put a blueprint to it. Yeah. And then we went and built it one freaking stick at a time with all the contractors. And I actually did do a bunch of work on it myself. And like, because I wanted to.
Which kind of feels good, right?
Vision.
When you have like.
Yeah.
Like I did a little bit to this room.
Yeah.
What I could.
Yeah, no,
there's a little
amazing.
Soul
and I love
of you
this,
in
and,
it.
And I love ceiling detail, and I love wood. So this is awesome. But then I talked about in comparison. Like I remember when I worked on a call center, and you know, do you remember a guy named Russ Whitney?
Yeah,
and he came walking in our office.
Real
and we
estate
called
dude,
his
right?
leads, right? Yeah, and we like called his leads. That was like one of my first sales jobs, was selling the training, you know. But I just remember thinking, like, man, this guy's like, God, I'm gonna be a speaker one day, you know, and like. It hit me when I was like coming home from, you know, a event I sponsored where I got up and spoke and I was really nervous, right? But it was like 15 years it took to become a speaker, right? But I just like, I like looked up to these guys so much, but I never really put a blueprint behind it. I never really created the vision and then created the blueprint to actually get there. So it took 15 years for my brain to actually like steer me to that thing that I wanted versus it only took me a few years to build this home I wanted because I had the vision and I was so passionate about it. I put a blueprint behind it.
And you, and you called, you had people help you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You had builders and architects exactly. and all that kind of yeah. stuff. So like you, if when we get isolated, like when anytime I was like, all right, I want to do comedy. That moment I had that thought, I called my comedian friend and said, hey, can we get together tomorrow? I have a premise. I look like Jesus, but I don't have his powers. Let's work on that. And then let's schedule an open mic. Like you just take that step.
Yeah.
And those are, but most people are uncomfortable. Let me get, let me, once I have X, Y, and Z, then I'll do it. And then yeah. they procrastinate it and it just gets
destroyed. Do you relate that to like the Thriver guy, right? Cause I related to a lot to the Thriver in your skit today. And I'm like, and I
that's
see,
what
I
I've been the longest part
too.
Of my life as a Thriver. That's too. What I've spent the most of my time. Yeah. And when things don't go according to plan, I'm like, I'll just work harder, yeah. right? Like I have that tendency, so I have to catch myself.
Is there a lot of the? Well, I have to figure it out myself, and it's hard for me to ask.
Yeah,
for
because
help
the because
people.
Status is the is what the Thriver goes for.
Yeah,
and status usually comes from what we've earned.
Yeah,
a high roller will get other people involved because it's opportunity.
Yeah,
they don't even care if they rented the car. If they have the car.
Yeah.
A Thriver, no, I paid for this car with my hard work.
Yeah.
The high roller's like, look how cool I'm gonna have this car. Yeah. Doesn't yeah, matter.
Just, they just want to take a picture with it.
Yeah, like it, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
Like a Thriver isn't guaranteed to take a picture inside of a private plane. A high roller will always take a picture inside of a yeah. private plane, right? Yeah. Like that's the difference. Like
the Thriver you know. Might be working in the private plane being right. like, oh, yeah, I've the, got the something high, else. I need a bigger jet.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like this they is feel a, bad yeah, when yeah. they see the yeah. other jet that's
I
bigger.
Couldn't have my whole family in here. It's only a 10-seater.
I have a friend that yeah. High roller friend that had a jet and he landed in Salt Lake
yeah.
and it was next to another jet. It was owned by the Huntsmans. It was bigger. And he literally said he put his hands over his head and he's like, I'm such a loser.
Yeah.
Right? Like
what a loser.
Someone always yeah. has more.
Bigger, yeah. better.
What comparison yeah. is so hard not to get
yeah.
stuck in.
Yeah.
It just is. It's yeah. like and by the, I think that wouldn't it be nice? Like I just have this at least most of the time a healthy perspective because I know the pain people carry around.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever you think someone's life is, there's this whole other side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Like maybe they're having trouble in their marriage or connecting with one of their kids, or maybe they just have something they did that they've never forgiven themselves for, or like there's just so much. And yet we're trying to compare ourselves to this idealistic version of someone that's not even real and then judge ourselves harshly for not being that.
Yeah. Well, I think that, I mean, that's just part of the human experience. Somebody's blessed maybe with the finances. You might have a great marriage, but be struggling financially. Like everybody will have their suffering and everyone will have their struggle. And that's up to you to bear. And there's a lesson behind that, that struggle that you're currently going through that will make you a better version of yourself as long as you actually face it valiantly. Right. And ask yourself the right questions and go in and ask what it's trying to teach you rather than just fight it and put a facade up of like everything's okay, you know, whatever it may be. But like the human experience is about, you know, pain and suffering and figuring out what's on the other side of it because that's where you're
learning
best
from it.
Yeah. And learning.
What if
from
you saw
it,
pain as a gift and as a love?
Exactly.
Part of love.
Yes.
Just a different angle of it.
Like for me, that's where I have all my aha moments is on the other side of pain is when I embrace pain. If I go on a long run and I'm by myself and I'm in my head, it gives me perspective. When I sit on my couch is far more comfortable because I swing the pain and pin it over here. But also when I release and I'm at home, the dopamine or euphoria also hits, right? So as much pain as you could as bear, that's as much euphoria, right? Most people live in this dull, like there's not a whole lot of movement to their life, right?
Right.
Like perspective wise. And so,
well said.
Yeah. Anyways. I think that.
Well, I know we got to. I got to ask one more question.
Yeah, please.
Okay? One more question before we wrap up. Because I thought of this question. I was just driving up, right? Because I've noticed. I started talking about it a little bit earlier in the episode, but I see these entrepreneurs. They just want to solve their problems with making more money. They want to get their money to work for them, but they're too lazy to actually take accountability to learn the money game, right? So what they do is they go to these wealth managers or whatever, and they're like, "Just tell me what to do, and I'll give you my money," right?
Yeah.
And I've done it myself too, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm starting over again now." Like I just wasted $800,000 on all these investments, and they're not paying me yet, and you know what I mean. And so I want to know like what kind of advice you would give to some of these entrepreneurs out there that are in that rat race,
yeah.
you know, because I've done it myself and I'm curious myself, like,
look, you got to be a steward over your finances. And anytime we go, I'm too busy, mm-hmm. I'm just going to trust someone else.
Yeah.
Most of them are just middlemen.
Yeah.
They give the money to some company that you don't know much about, that come in those stocks that you don't have any relationship to. So invest back in yourself. Be okay growing your business, especially if it means less involvement from you and more cash flow. That becomes more equity value inside of that business. And just store your cash in place that it's accessible and safe. So for me, like, I have this cabin because I utilize it. Yeah. That's an investment. I have this studio. Like, my intellectual property is part of my investments because it's something you can create ongoing revenue. So I have a lot more books that come out since I adopted that philosophy.
Yeah.
When it used to be, well, I want to have a bunch of real estate. That wasn't really my gig. I want real estate that I'm going to utilize. And then, so I'm now saying, I don't want to have more real estate. This is what I can handle. I don't want to have to hire more people to handle it. You know, I have a music studio, I have this, and then I have my house. That's plenty. I'm going to just continue to maximize my intellectual property. I'm going to continue to store cash and cash flow banking, cash value insurance that I can tap into and utilize anytime I want. And like, from my belief in the money system, I have money in Bitcoin just because I just don't believe in fractionalized banking in our money system. And I know that that's going to be a wild ride and I wouldn't recommend everybody do it, but I like the decentralized nature and I like that I can put it in my pocket in a thumb drive and go wherever I want.
Yeah. Something, you know, disrupting.
And I could send money within moments. Like when I tried to wire to close on my house, it took
days.
So
days.
When you are investing outside of yourself, look for things that are assets that you can access capital from to always use.
Risk-free capital outside of your business. Take your risk in your business. That's the summary.
And be accountable for your own money, right? Yep. Like, that's been the biggest lesson I've learned through being in the whole money industry over these years. Is like, no one's going to care about it more than you. You don't want to learn it. It's unsexy, but you have to if you really want to be able to.
Unless you just
want
to give it away, because that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, dude. I appreciate your time, man. That was amazing. Awesome.
Yeah, I loved it.
Good spending the day with you guys so far.
Likewise. Yeah. It's been fun. It's been cool. Guys, if you enjoyed today's episode, make sure that you rate it, review it, all that good stuff. Share it with somebody that you love and care about that you know will get value from it. I know Garrett brought a ton of value. And he continues to bring value to the world on a day-to-day basis. So make sure you check him out. Go take the quiz on his website. Follow him so that you know when the book comes out on the website there. So
YouTube.
Wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, like Garrett.live will take you to my YouTube channel, or just Garrett Gunderson TV in YouTube will take you to my channel. Subscribe. Cool. I put out videos like 3 times a week typically.
And just know if he shows you love, he's on the shitter.
Guys, he's fun to you. Yeah. That's the lesson today.
Yeah, that's the big takeaway. Guys, keep kicking ass. Take care. We'll see you next week.